again. So we lost some people. I knew we were going to lose some people. Yeah, no, I know. Some will come in and people are going, there's all kinds of cool stuff here and it's great. There's all kinds of great stuff going on at the birthday party. You cannot do this wrong. Okay. So now we're going to talk about the amends, right? Because again, the book says, I made, on page 76, it says, I made my 8-step list when I took my 4-step. So that means, as my sponsor pointed out to me, that everybody who's on my 4-step gets an amends. Okay? So, right? I've had this great spiritual experience with seeing my part in the fourth column. I love it. I got to the 6th and 7th step, and that first sponsor of mine pointed out that because in the 7th step prayer, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad, right? Because it's referencing good and bad, she not only had me identify my character defects, but she also had me identify my assets, which was the first time it got introduced to me, this whole idea that not knowing my value or not knowing what was good about me was actually a character defect, right? My low self-esteem was actually a character defect. There was nothing noble about it. I was taught by my kind of martyrish Catholic father, well-intentioned, but and just simply, you know, perpetuating what he had learned in childhood, but that somehow not knowing my value was a noble thing. There's nothing noble about it, and I carry it into the world. So that was the first place that got introduced to me. So I'm, you know, coming off the high of creating that list of character defects and assets and just loving that, and that's wonderful. And then it gets introduced to me that everybody who's on my 4-step is going to be owed an amends, right? And I thought, okay, all right. So do you want to explain that to me? And are you telling me that I actually need to show up and I need to apologize to Joe? I mean, again, it wasn't a fair fight. Are you kidding me? And she said, oh, honey. She said, of course you're not going to show up and you don't have to apologize and giving him an amends. That's not what I'm talking about. She said, but what I am talking about is you're not responsible for the fact that he molested you. You have zero responsibility with that. Zero. She said, but you are responsible for the fact that you haven't forgiven him for 15 years. That you are responsible for. And she said, so what we're going to have you do, because again, we don't need to show up and see anybody, though I have sponsored people, and just about everybody that I sponsor was molested, right? Either by a stranger or a family member, just about everyone. I mean, water rises to its own level. And again, because I work with chronic slippers exclusively, I work with people who have really struggled here. And the reason that people are struggling here, three reasons. They're not done with the food. It's still working somehow. There's some pain. Something hurts. And they haven't found the way to access that. And I'm not a healthcare professional. The steps are profound, but I've also sought outside help, and it's been very, very useful for me, therapy and the like. But also, they're not there yet. There's someone they haven't forgiven, right? That seems to be the common denominator with people that I've sponsored who are struggling, have struggled here for years. Somebody hasn't gotten forgiven, right? So my sponsor said, so you don't need to show up and say anything to Joe, she said, but we're going to write him a letter. And again, when you read the section in the book about steps 8 and 9, which is from 76 to 84, I guess, that's where they kind of bulk up steps 8 and 9. And there isn't a lot of specific direction we're given about how to make amends. We're not given direction about how to make amends. So, as my sponsor pointed out to me, you are reliant upon good sponsorship, a legacy of good sponsorship. Make sure your sponsor has a sponsor who has a sponsor, right, is what my sponsor taught me. So, and you know, just make it a good line. Make sure those sponsors are going to meetings. I had a sponsor in AA who drank, and she didn't go to meetings. She was the head of a big treatment center in Southern California, one of the really big ones, and she didn't go to meetings. And she was a wonderful sponsor. She didn't push me to go to meetings, but she didn't have to. I love meetings. I always have, because I didn't come from a family where anybody told the truth. So the idea that I was going to come in a meeting and people were going to open their mouths and complete strangers and just really reveal themselves and get vulnerable, well, that was just manna from heaven for me, right? I loved meetings from my first meeting. I loved it right from the beginning. I just loved it. So it was not a struggle to get to meetings. But, yeah, my sponsor never directed me to meetings because she wasn't going to meetings. And 2 years later, she drank, right? She lost that big job at that big treatment center because they don't want drinking people heading their treatment centers. It is not a good marketing tool. So, I love what we do here, and I love all the turning inside out. So when my sponsor said, you're going to write a letter to Joe, I said yes. Because that the only correct, I always tell my sponsees, the only correct answer to a sponsor is yes. It just is. And it's not about compliance, or it's not about, it's not because I'm a bitch or a drill sergeant or your mommy, right? It's because I understand surrender. And years ago, there was a guy in he was in my first year of AA, and he was a World War II veteran, and he had served in the Pacific component of World War II, and he had been captured. He was a POW. He'd been captured by the Japanese when he was, wending his way through, right, grasses or something, right? There had been a crash, a plane crash, and they were crawling and stuff. And he said he felt the gun. And again, he was somebody I met in Alcoholics Anonymous. He had umpteen years of sobriety. But he said he felt a gun at his temple, and he heard someone screaming, surrender, surrender, in Japanese. And he said he knew about 10 words of Japanese, and thankfully surrender was one of those words. But he said he felt that gun at his temple, hearing somebody scream, surrender, surrender. And he said he flipped over on his belly, and just was like a dog, right? Just completely exposing his belly, exposing his neck, arms up like this, right? Just completely surrendered, making it clear to this guy that he was out of good ideas, right? He didn't have any good ideas. And he said that for him was the same feeling he needed to have coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, right? That I don't have any, I always tell my sponsees, be out of good ideas. Because the reality is you don't have any good ideas about how to stay abstinent, right? You might have a lot of other good ideas, but you don't have any good ideas about how to stay abstinent, and neither do I. That's why I have a sponsor. I have a couple of sponsors, actually. In the Midwest, they actually recommend that you get 3 sponsors. Actually, that's the recommendation when you come in. Anyway, so when my sponsor said, this is what we're going to do, I said, okay, great. So how does this go? And she said, well, there are 3 components to the letter. She said, and write this down. You'll want this, right? Because this was a good piece of direction I got from her. And she said, and you keep it brief because we keep the story out of it. So again, 3 components to an amends letter. And this was the letter I wrote to Joe, who had molested me. Dear Joe, first part of the letter, I forgive you for having molested me 15 years ago. That's the first part. You tell the person, I forgive you for the nitwit thing you did. I forgive you. Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. Second part, please forgive me for not having forgiven you for 15 years. That's the second part of the letter. So I forgive you for doing the bad thing. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you for doing the bad thing. And then the third thing she said is write something nice about Joe. Because the reality is, when somebody's done something horrible, right, we see them through a telescope. All of a sudden, this is all that they are, right? Well, that's not all that Joe was, right? In the same way that I am so much more than my worst moment. Right? We all are, right? We've all probably got gremlin moments, right? Repeating what? The whole thing of the three parts of the letter? Yep. So, dear Joe, so the first part is, I forgive you for the bad thing you did to me. So when you're writing this letter, and I have all my sponsees, even if we're going to go and we're going to do stuff or talk to people or pay people back or whatever, I have them write these letters across the board because I want them to start getting this in your DNA. This is your place of freedom and power, is getting it. I forgive you for the bad thing you did to me. So that's the first part. Second part, please forgive me for not having forgiven you of that for however long it was. And I have them identify the time period so that you know how long you've been carrying this nonsense. Right? So that's the second part of the letter. And the third part is, she said, write something nice about Joe. So one of the things Joe did, he was a family friend, and he used to bring me the wheat pennies. Nobody under 35 is going to know what the wheat pennies are. But they used to, we used to have pennies that had little wheat sheaths on the back. Sheaths. They had wheat deals, right, on the back of these pennies, right? Sheaths. Thank you. Wheat sheaves on the back. And he used to bring me those pennies. So I wrote, you know, Joe, thank you for bringing me all those wheat pennies. You know how much I liked those. And then she said, sign the letter off as high as you can go, and there's nothing higher than love. And it's all going to come out in the wash at the end, precious. So maybe you just want to act as if. She said, but if you can't, then sign off sincerely, best, cheers, right? Whatever, you know, regards, warmly, right? But nothing's higher than love. So I always sign my letters, love, even when I didn't feel it. I was willing to just, you know, act my way into right thinking. That made sense to me. And she recommended it, so I did it. Yes, Elle.
Did you send the letter?
No. She said, we do not send letters to pedophiles. We don't. Now, again, I got sidetracked. You know, again, most of the people I sponsor have been molested. And I have had, and because this is a tribute to how this works and how powerful this is. And again, I also don't debate this with people. There are people who, it doesn't, first of all, the word sponsor is not referenced in the big book at all. So people say, oh, you can't sponsor men and, you know, women and men. I don't get into debates with people about this. First of all, don't argue with anybody in the 12-step rooms. People love to argue here. You know, we all do. We all do, right? We love to argue and we love to be right. It's a tunnel with no cheese. Don't do it, right? So I don't argue with people, but the reality is I sponsor men. If men need sponsors, I sponsor men because, again, I work with chronic slippers. And people that I sponsor in this program and in the mother program, if they don't get sober, abstinent, whatever, but especially, you know, usually around sobriety, but sometimes with abstinence, right? I did have an anorexic sponsee who, I'll tell you about that later, but who starved to death, right? But not on my watch. Not on my watch because I was requiring her to eat and then requiring her to get some professional help because she was very, very thin. And so she fired me. And then I showed up at a birthday party. This was about 20 years ago. I showed up at no, 15 years ago. I showed up at a birthday party and she wasn't there. And she always would come to these birthday parties. And I knew people who knew her and, you know, saw those people. And I said, oh, where's, you know, let's call her Mary. I said, where's Mary? And she said, oh, didn't you hear? And I said, no, what? They said, well, she died. And I said, how'd she die? And they said, well, she starved to death. Right? But like I said, not on my watch. So I keep people lovingly, gloriously accountable. Love, lots of love. It's all about the love. I am not, I'm, you know, if being mean was going to solve my problem, my dad would have solved my weight problem in childhood, right? It doesn't go that way. I don't need anybody to be mean to me. I sought out in the first couple years, I had a mean sponsor or two here and there, but I got, you know, recovered from that quickly, right? So just all kinds of love. But I do need people to be very honest with me, right? I need them to be loving and honest. And that I require. So, you know, again, I got directed to write this letter, and she said, you don't need to send it out. She said, but it's really important that you write it. And then she had me put it in my God box. Right? So that was what I did with the letter. And what I will do with sponsees is I have them write those letters, and then they'll read them to me. And then we'll go through and we'll figure out different people where they might actually need to show up and do stuff and things like that. But the cool thing is through this process, right, again, because what happens here is I get literally transformed. And I get, we solve what is my real problem, which, remember, I don't love easily and I don't forgive easily. Those are my problems. And then it just shows up in terms of, you know, body weight and things like that. But what has happened is not only did I find myself in situations where I was working with people who had been molested, well, then I started realizing I was sponsoring men who had molested. And one of my last sponsees, it was about a year and a half ago, he was kind of a serial molester. He'd molested probably 20 people. And I listened to his four-step. It's like an eight-hour four-step. And I remember my sponsor said to me, and we split it up over a couple of days, and my sponsor said, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? Right? And I said, I'm fine. I could not wait. You know, I hugged him at the end that first day, our first four-hour thing, and then the next time we did another four-hour thing, I hugged him and I loved him. That was real clear. And that man, grown man, right, cried like a baby. He's in the mother program. He belongs in this one, too. But, anyway, he cried like a baby. And he just said that he'd never had anybody who had really kind of loved him in that way, right? That's great. I mean, that's cool. And I take people through the steps, and then I loving, it doesn't take long. We work the steps as they're outlined in the big book. Doesn't take long. It takes about 3 months. And then I turn them loose. I say, go get another sponsor. Go find someone else. Work the steps with someone else. Hear what someone else has to say, right? I've given you everything I got, right? See what someone else has to say. We don't want this program to ever be about personalities or this one, that one, whatever, right? You know, if you're drowning, a blue boat, a red boat, a purple boat, a green boat, pink boat will save your life. But get out of the water. Get in a boat. Right? Because you're, again, remember, I work with chronic slippers, right? I tell them, like, you are drowning, right? And the not only are you drowning, but the sharks are circling, right? You're in the water. You're chum. Right? Get in a boat. Because people always say, oh, I gotta have the right sponsor. It's the right sponsor. It's like, you're drowning. Get in a boat. Nitwit. Get in a boat. I don't say nitwit, but you know what I mean? Like, get in a boat. What does that mean? The right sponsor. Look, I need somebody to be loving and kind. I need someone to be there. If I'm supposed to call you at 8 o'clock, ideally you would be there at 8 o'clock when I call. Right? But otherwise, this is not brain surgery. It's loving, listening, and compassion. What is the most beautiful thing? Boy, I hope I can remember it. Oh, dear. I don't know. We'll see if I remember it. Somebody said the most beautiful thing about what it is we do here. And it really is, it's just a holy listening. It's loving listening. There's nothing even really to say a lot of times. It's just listening, you know? That's the gift we give each other here. Anyway, so when I saw that I'd really come full circle, that I can, you know, I can be very helpful, it seems, with people who've been through this, but I can also be really loving and helpful with men who've done it, who've molested children. I just thought, that's it. That's the turning inside out here that I wanted, right? So that's what's happened for me with my four-step and my eight-step and my ninth-step. And again, it was a process. So remember, I did this for the first time and did not put down the sugar till 10 years later. So the weight started slowly coming down. But sugar works for me like a drug. And I was not done. I could not put the food down. But remember that about not being done, you know, because it's just really careful to not. We have to, because I've talked to, you know, longtime people who are here, and all of us kind of share that we have this in common sometimes, is there can still be a tendency to judge, even in the rooms, outside of the rooms. And it's hard because being overweight, it's the only prejudice that's still actively sanctioned in society, right? We'll have, I mean, there are sitcoms that are built around overweight people, right? Saturday Night Live has lost how many fat comedians? And somebody dies and then they just get another one, right? I mean, it happens all the time. So again, it's the only prejudice that we still actively sanction and say it's okay, right? And so it's tricky, but it's just, I have to be really vigilant about this. Because, you know, if you've been here a long time and you see people and maybe you think, boy, so-and-so's been here a long time and she's never really addressed her weight issue. I wonder what that's about, you know? It is so not my business. It is so indicative of my lack of spiritual health and recovery if I'm having those kind of conversations in my head, let alone if I've gotten really far off the track and I'm having them with somebody. Those are dreadful conversations, right? So this is supposed to be a safe place. The rooms are supposed to be a safe place for people. And I would just invite you to really do that. Make it really safe and loving for people. Because I do know this, as somebody who just couldn't put it down for years, I just wasn't done. I wasn't done. I wasn't ready to feel the feelings. That's why when somebody did kind of counter me one time at an event or something, you know, on a panel or so, who knows, and he came up to me afterwards and said, you know, what do you mean you let people work the steps when they're still in the food? How can they do that? You know, they're not clear and this and that. And the book addresses it. I mean, thank God. Now I would just say, well, I just know that if you look at page 30 and 31, the book thinks it's a good idea. So, you know, that's I just am following direction anyway. I'm not going to debate this with anybody. But I remember what I said at the time is I said, I am not going to say to somebody who is struggling with weight and pain and anxiety, I'm not going to say to them that they can't work the steps because they haven't stopped eating sugar or they haven't stopped throwing up. I'm not going to say that to somebody because what we say here is if you want to get free, if you want to get recovery, you got to work the steps. So I'm not going to say to somebody who wants all those things, but they can't stop eating the food. I'm not going to say to them, sorry, you don't get to work the steps. And let me tell you something. You know, we're kind of laughing about this. You cannot know how many times that happens out there. You cannot know. It's weird. Some of the stuff when I hear, and whenever anybody starts saying this to me and they want to tell me who their sponsor is, I say, don't tell me. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what their name is. I don't want to know what meetings they go to because that's all I need, right? To be at a meeting kind of doing this, right? Right. That's all I need. And let me tell you, it's well within the realm of possibility, right? But people have said hurtful things to people. I heard a guy, you know, there was a guy who came to a workshop I did a couple of months ago, and his sponsor told him that not only could he not work the steps, but that he couldn't share at meetings. Yeah. Isn't that nice? Right? So you're in pain. You can't stop. And you can't work the steps, which we say is how this works and how you get free. You can't work the steps because you haven't stopped the food behavior. And you can't share at meetings. And that was his sponsor. And he asked me a sponsor and I wasn't available, but I found him a sponsor. I found him a sponsor within an hour. And I don't usually do that, but I found him a sponsor. Someone loving and sweet and wonderful. Wait, a great guy, right? And I just said, I don't have an opinion about what your sponsor is doing. It sounds very hurtful to me because I didn't share this. He didn't need to hear me wah, 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 about his sponsor. Let me tell you something. I had a lot of opinions about what his sponsor was doing, right? But I didn't share that with him because that's not useful for him. I just said, it just sounds very painful, and it sounds like you're having a hard time with it. And it just, it doesn't, I don't see anything in the literature that corroborates that kind of idea, right? Because it's supposed to be safe, for Christ's sake. Make the room safe is all I would, you know, invite all of us to make sure we're doing, right? Make it safe. So that's what we have. So does anybody, and it's cool if nobody does, but, because we can, you know, I can tell you a couple things when people have ended up. And the reality is we might not have built up the trust in the room. It takes a while for somebody to get up here. And usually whenever anybody gets up here and they haven't forgiven someone, it's either a mother or it's a molestation thing. So, you know, that's a big deal. But is there anybody who is really struggling with something and we can walk through this? Again, keeping in mind, I am not a healthcare professional. I'm not. No, for real. That's a really important piece of the puzzle. Okay, and now there are a few people who put their hands up, so I'm just going to wait. I'm going to close my eyes and just wait because I'm not going to pick and, you know, get myself on somebody's resentment list when they didn't get picked. So whoever wants to do it, somebody, whoever comes up and takes my hand, that's what we'll do it. Sorry, I don't know. Sorry. All right, very good. You were the first one I saw, just okay. So you know, it was the first hand I saw. So this. No, she was. No, I mean, it just works out well. No, and she works out well. Everybody's pretty. All women are princesses, and all men are princes, and handsome, and wonderful, and loving. But very good. And the thing is, as if you, you know, if you had your hand up and you didn't get picked, you can actually do this with a sponsor. You can take my number. You can call me. We can go through it. Just make sure it's cool, makes sense to your sponsor. But the reality is you can do it with your sponsor. There's nothing magic. We're just going to take a look. Now, I just want to ask for a qualification here. Is this real deal? Like, you're really struggling with this? Yes. Okay, good. Is there a good chance we might get tears or something really dramatic? It's good.
Well, I don't.
I'm just being silly. That's just silly. Usually people cry up here, but don't. I don't want you to feel bad just because you're not going to cry. All right. So I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But all right, my love. So I am going to. So who wanted? You were gonna. Did you want to do? No, or Jennifer. Somebody. Whoever. Who would like to do? Will you write down so I can walk through? Will you, my love? Thank you. All right. Very good. So tell me your first name.
Zelda,
sweet Zelda. Very good. So Zelda, you resent whom?
My father.
Very good. Oh, that's good. That's good. My father, right. Very good. Very good. So she resents her father. And why? And you know, it's brief. This is not a story. So keep it really brief. And here's the thing I would just invite you. This is a really, you know, somebody's giving us a gift. So we have somebody who's, you know, she struggled with this and it's a daddy issue. So I would just, you know, if you want to do conversations or something, just, you know, if you would take it out, just because we want to kind of make it, you know, a safe and sacred space and just really honor the fact that somebody is actually telling us that, something hurts and I can't let this go. Can you help me? And she's asking basically a whole room full of strangers. Okay, what's the cause?
Well,
give me the first one.
Judgment.
Okay.
I was never thin enough. Really.
Okay, is that the big ticket one? Is that the big ticket one?
That's so many.
Well, read a few of them. Give me five. Because you'll instinctively read the five big ones.
Never thin enough, never pretty enough, never rich enough, never good enough, never smart enough.
Okay. All right. And how long have you had this resentment? What does that sound?
So probably 50 years.
Okay. Okay. So the cause sounds like not enough. I was never enough. Does that sound okay with you?
My father criticized me.
Yeah, but the cause, I was never enough. Right? I wasn't thin enough, smart enough, rich enough, didn't, you know, enough. So I was never enough. What has your sponsor said about this, Zelda?
She has said what you've said to write down and how did I react to it? Like, you know, what do I feel? She likes me to talk about if I was never pretty enough. How did that make me feel?
Yeah.
How did I feel? Not as pretty, not as, you know, or not as good as someone.
Have you ever done this? Okay, cool. Yeah, and again, nobody's doing it wrong, and any four-step is a great four-step, and everybody's sponsor is doing it right. Whenever anybody calls me and wants to hear my two cents, the first question I always ask somebody is, what does your sponsor say about that? right? Always, because it matters very little what somebody, an outsider, is weighing in about something. But it really matters what the person who you have a long-term relationship with is saying about it. Now, the one interesting thing that I heard is her sponsor's having her write about it. You know? Okay. And sometimes that can work, and sometimes, most times, I think it doesn't. It just keeps me in the story. Yes, you have a hand up?
I just want to ask a question. I don't know, maybe I missed it. Is he still alive?
Yes, he's a very old man now.
That's a good question. Thank you. It's a good thing to include. How old is your daddy?
92.
Very good. Okay, that's an excellent question. Thanks for bringing that up. Good, good point. All right, very good. So let's look here now. So again, so this is just from the big book stuff. And all the work, all the wonderful work you've done with your sponsor is probably what got you to the point that you raised your hand and you rushed up here. So it's all, you know, every four step has been done correctly, right? It's just, I really dig the big book one. I like the idea of taking the story out of it. It's really good for me because I'm a storyteller and I can get you on my team, right? And the reality is if you're on my team, you're not going to say, hey, Sheila, I think you should look at your part. Or I think you might be missing this. Or, you know, a woman named River came up on the break and said some, you know, really cool stuff. And, I want her to call me so we can chat more. See, that doesn't happen if all I've been interested in doing is getting you on my team. Right? And I do that with story. So does it affect the idea that you resent your father, right? Does that affect your self-esteem?
Absolutely.
Okay. Does it affect you financially? Okay. Does it affect your ambitions?
Yes.
Does it affect your relationships?
Oh, yes.
Does it affect you sexually?
Yes.
Does it affect your security?
Yes.
Does it affect your pride?
Yep.
Okay. All right, good. Okay, cool. So you got all those things checked. So that's a lot of ways to be affected. And remember, this is her father. He's old. She's got been affected. She talked 50 years. This is a resentment she's had, right? So this is some heavy-duty baggage. Now, we can go to the fourth column. Do you see, Zelda, where this not forgiving him, remember? Because that's what resentment is. I don't forgive you. That's what a resentment is. Do you see where that's selfish? Who's it about, Zelda, being pissed off at your daddy? Who's,
well, it's affecting me.
Right, but who's it about? Whose position are you taking? Whose position are you looking at?
At me.
Right.
Yeah, me.
Right. Is there anything selfish about that?
I could see where you could say that, but I don't feel I had any part in that you did it to me.
I didn't ask that. I asked if, and again, I'm right there with you, Zelda. I got a, you know, daddy-in-law who kicked me out. But I just know, there's a great poem by, Marabi, and the last two lines of it are, I have felt the sway of the elephant's shoulders, and now you want me to climb on a jackass? Try to be serious. Right? So I have felt the sway of the elephant's shoulders in terms of forgiveness and what happens here when I surrender and let go. I am not going to ride on a jackass just to be pissed off at my father-in-law. You know what I mean? Like, even if I don't get it, I'm going to show up and get it. And if my sponsor tells me to call him and be on the phone and act as if nothing happened because he will not bring it up, I will do exactly what she said because I have felt the sway of the elephant's shoulders. And I don't want to weigh 200 pounds again. But that would be the last part of it, right? You get hit by a train. It's not the caboose that kills you, right? It's not weighing 200 pounds again that would kill me. It's that corruption of the spirit. That's what would kill me, right? Yeah.
I know. It's happened over yeah. and over again.
Yeah. No, I know. I know.
Sure.
So she had a question, you know, what if somebody does something over and over? And are you cool with this, Zelda, that we're all just kind of playing with this? And that's cool. You're a good sport. And that's great. So she's saying, you know, if somebody does this over and over again, what do you do, right? You're kind of going, and now somebody wants to respond. What's your response?
Well, there's other factors going on, and I think when you're looking at it that way, you're just looking at how you're constantly getting stuck, and you don't have the ability to get past what they're doing, and you're taking it personally. And the only way they can actually do something to you, especially with words, is if you take it. And I think the lesson is to learn bit by bit how to stop seeing it as a personal attack and how to start seeing it as that person's limitations, that person's smallness, and start having compassion for them that they cannot interact with you without doing that.
Okay.
Okay.
That's great. And listen, here's the thing. I'm sure everybody is going to have lots and lots of great comments. So I would invite you to connect in with Zelda, right? And I want to try and get through this exercise and just show you, this is what I do with sponsees. I'm going to literally show you what I would do. Because again, she just really is giving us a gift. Because pretend that she and I are alone in the room. You're going to see what I would do with a sponsee. And again, this is just something that's worked well for me. Maybe it's something you want to try on. Maybe it's not anything that resonates for you, but I just want to show you how I would do this. So I told you, 1, 2, 3. So I threw out one thing, and she kind of said, yeah, she might see it's selfish, right? But she's not really sure. So I'm going to take another crack at it, okay? So I really understand, Zelda, that this hurts you and you don't see that you have a part in it. What I'm trying to point out to you is that you had this going on with your dad, right? This idea that he communicated to you that you were never enough. Right. Wounded people who feel good about themselves don't hurt other people. Do you think it's a possibility that anybody ever communicated to your father that he was never enough? Maybe when he was a child? Is that a possibility? I mean, I don't know. That's a fact. So you know that about your grandma. Okay. So she said that he was a good for nothing. Okay. Does that allow you to understand it a little bit more or feel a little more compassion for him in terms of his inability to parent you well? And it's okay if the answer is no. I always tell people that. It's okay. It's okay if the answer is no, Zelda. You don't need to do anything up here for us. Okay. Okay. So he should have learned. Okay. So I'm going to try one more time. Because again, two things are either going on here. She either can't see it, and you can't make anybody do anything, right? Remember the ABC we read at the end of How It Works? We were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. See that God could and would if he were sought, right? So it works a little bit better sometimes in terms of thinking about it in terms of alcoholism, but not forgive. Here, put your fingers in your ears for a minute. Not forgiving and not letting go. That's alcoholism. That's alcoholism. That's the pathology. I can't solve this problem for you. You can pull them out. I can't solve this problem for anybody. The reality is nobody could. You could have Carl Jung in here. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't do it. Right? I can't make anybody see this. Or I'm wrong about this, right? Because I always want to leave that option too, right? I don't ever want to think I got this handled and you just don't get it. You're not getting it. You're not ready. No. Right? I just know I've tried twice and she's not getting it yet. So I'm going to try one more time. And so then it would be... are you in pain of the fact that your dad has done this to you, Zelda? Are you in pain right now?
Yes.
Do you think your dad was in pain when his mother said that he was a good for nothing, I think you said?
Probably.
Is your pain more important than his?
I own my own pain.
I don't know what that means.
I'm sure he was in pain.
Is your pain more important than his?
I would say equal.
I'm really sorry you're in pain. It's all that I know that you are. Okay, and I'm going to stop there, right? Because, again, this is beautiful, and the idea that somebody is getting up, you know, in a room this big when we haven't really created, you know, she's really given us a gift. And she got to a very holy spot because now at least there's a parity with the pain. She sees that her pain is equal to her dad's pain. So then what I would say is, all right, my pumpkin, so should I put a check here or no? For selfish. And it's okay if the answer is no. I always remind people that. And it's really okay, Zelda, for real. Very good. So no. So then I say, can we move on to the next one? Great. Do you see, Zelda, where it's fear-based for you to not be forgiving your dad? You have a lot of fear. So shall I go ahead and put a check mark here? Okay. Can you see where it's dishonest for you to not forgive your dad? For all those ways that he communicated you were never enough? It's okay if the answer is no.
I'd say no.
Okay. Okay.
Can't own it yet.
Okay. Okay. No, I hear you. I hear you. Well, I asked her if she understood where it was fearful, where she's fearful, to not forgive her father. And she said that, yes, she really gets that. She's been fearful. Is that what you said, that she's been pretty fearful?
What does that mean, fearful for forgiving? I'm fearful both ways, if I don't forgive and if I give, what will happen?
That's what I thought. So she's afraid to forgive him, and she's afraid to not forgive him.
I don't get the dishonest part. That's the part where
she doesn't either.
Okay.
So we'll take a look at this, right? Very good. I gotcha. And here's how I do it. So here, the first thing I do is I say, is there anybody in your life, Zelda, that you want to forgive you? Is it dishonest for you to not forgive your father when there are people you want to be forgiven? That is, you want something that you are not willing to give. Is that dishonest? Is that check mark worthy or no?
Being honest with myself, I would have to say I have been dishonest with many people. And I've been dishonest with him too.
Sure. And again, kiddo, I'm not asking about in terms of dishonesty with your father, but keeping in mind that resentment is I don't forgive you, right? Because she's kind of giving me some leeway, so we're going to go with this one a little bit. We might get a check mark out of this one, right? But so you said you don't forgive your father because he communicated to you always that you were never enough and you don't forgive him because knowing that that's what a resentment is. Are there people, again, I was asking you, are there people who you need to have those people forgive you? Have you heard anybody who might be pissed off at you? Okay. Is it dishonest? Do you want the forgiveness from those people? Okay, is it dishonest for you to want forgiveness from people when you're not willing to extend it to your father?
It is dishonest.
Is that check mark worthy?
Put it that way.
See, sometimes, and when I say like I put it that way, right? See, that's the thing. It's all about, like somebody just opened that door, right? It's all about an open door. What I'll usually tell people is I'll say, if you can't even get this, and it works, it's not going to work on this door because it's going to shut automatically, but I'll say, like, are you willing to just open the door this much, right? Allowing, you know, whatever you imagine as your higher power, sunlight of the spirit, right, breath, wind, whatever it is, to kind of throw it open. Well, we got some headway here. So she recognizes that there are people she wants to forgive and that, maybe it's dishonest for her to not forgive her father because she wants forgiveness. And she's saying, well, when you put it that way, well, all we need to do is have the door open just a little bit for something to shift. That's all we need to do. That's my part. And that's my responsibility as a sponsor, in a loving, kind, and gracious and patient way, to present things to people as my sponsors have presented me and continue to present me, right, as I'm going through this, and we'll be going through this with my father-in-law stuff with a sponsor, right, so that I can see something. Should I put a check mark here? So that I can see something that I, up to that point, haven't been able to see. Because when people know better, they do better. When I know better, when I see something that I hadn't seen before, I can do something differently. Not until then. Yes, you had your hand up. Yep. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm a writer. I have two dictionaries on my phone. I'm not going to pull out my dictionary and look up the definition of dishonest, right? Because we just don't have time for that. But I think we all know what dishonest means. It means not true, right? So again, I don't turn this into a big thing. I don't complicate this. All I do is I look at what it directs me in the book. And what it tells me is it not true? Is there a lack of not being true or forthright? Again, I'm trying to think what, I don't know. I'll check it out. Now I want to know on the break. Well, and the reality is, if I want somebody's chair, right? And then the next day I've got an extra chair, and somebody says, can I have your chair? And I say, no, you can't. Uh-uh. Well, that's dishonest. I mean, I wanted something. I think you guys get this. And if we keep kind of going over this, we're gonna run past it. The reality is, claim victory and depart the field. Right? If you've got a sponsee who's willing to acknowledge, hey, maybe the idea that I want something from people that I'm not willing to give to my father, so I want forgiveness, but I don't want to extend it, that reeks of dishonesty.
But this is important. I took a big book workshop for a few years. Mm-hmm. The way I learned dishonesty is dishonesty in that relationship. Have I been untruthful in that relationship? So it's really important that we clarify.
That's a good point. Maybe. You know, all these things. I mean, everything. Everybody could raise their hands and have a point about this. And it's all true. The point is, all you want to do, you're just looking for an opening, right? You're just looking for an opening in somebody's heart. That's all you're trying to do. Is there another cap? Do you have the cap somewhere?
It's over there.
Okay, thank you. But I just don't want to get written on by that thing. But you're just looking for an opening. You just want an open space. Again, when somebody has been wrestling with this stuff for years, and they finally start making a connection that, oh, this isn't because there's anything wrong with me or this, but gosh, it has to do with something. Like, there's real pain here. You can see it on her face, right? There's real pain here. And the idea that she's seen this, and she's seen this, it doesn't matter whether it makes sense or the parsing it out, none of that stuff. It's just an opening. You just want an opening, right? Not for me. Not because I get points or whatever. It's because it's open. Everybody wins if Zelda has an opening around her father, right? Everybody wins. It's like me. I go to a lot of meetings. I went on my honeymoon. I went to an AA meeting on every single day of my honeymoon. And when we came back, somebody said to my husband, how'd you feel about that? My husband's like, are you kidding? Everybody wins if Sheila's been to a meeting. Right? Everybody wins. Right? Send her to a meeting. Better blowjobs. Right? Whatever it is. Right? Everybody wins. Hey, and who said, wasn't Martin Luther King? Right? Until we're all free, None of us are free. So I just want her to see a little something, something. If she wants, if she's ready, if she's there, if this is the place, if this is how God wants to use me in this moment, right? For her to see something, that's all. And this blessed spot, if that's going to happen, if it's supposed to happen, this is, you know, I'm a servant, right? I'm a channel. I'm here to do thy will, not mine, be done, right? If, and she's not doing it, nobody's doing it wrong. She's perfect. She's perfect, whole, and complete. She doesn't know that because this still hurts. That still hurts. I just want her to not hurt, you know? Yeah, anything. But you know, here's the newsflash. Here's the newsflash. He's not the one being held bound. He's not the one who's being held bound. Stick your fingers in your ears again. He's not the one that needs to be forgiven. She is. It's not about her father. It's not about him. It's not about him at all. It's about her. She believes this stuff. She believes it. Right? That's what it's about. Right? So it's an opening, kind of an opening and forgiveness of self. Right? Yeah. Well, I did have a sponsee who did that, and it was great. She was an interesting sponsee because she was a chronic slipper, and she was about 150 pounds overweight, very, very successful engineering type. And we got to the four-step, and she talked about, well, actually, let me save that story, but you will want to hear that story. Save that, and let me do this. I just want to wrap up with Zelda because I don't want to keep her standing up here. So beautiful work, Zelda. This is really lovely, and you really gave us a gift. And I really identify. So thank you. Yep, thank you. Oh, call me. And call me. You're going to call me. We're going to be in touch. Yep. That's a real gift. That's a real gift. So anyway, so I had this sponsee because she says, what do you do if somebody won't, if they won't, you know, they do all this stuff, but they don't want to make the amends? And again, by the time somebody gets to me, usually that stuff isn't going on. And it's not for any other reason. You know, I remember being at a meeting once and somebody said, oh, you better get it together and listen to your sponsor or else you're going to have to be sponsored by Sheila. And I thought, what? What is that? What is that? What is that? Criminy. First of all, I'm very loving and kind. You know, I love people and I love the space and I'm never talking from any spiritual hilltop. You know, I mean, I've always got juice and there's always something going on. So, I mean, it's really easy for me to stay right-sized about this. But I feel great compassion for people who are in pain and was in pain for a long time myself, right? So I like working with chronic slippers. But so I was working with this woman, but again, so my point is, by the time somebody gets to me, they've been pretty badly mangled, and they're kind of done. So I don't really have a whole lot of experience with somebody saying, no, I'm not going to do this. So this woman really caught me off guard, right? She said, no, I'm actually not going to do that. I gave her direction. I thought, right? And I'm also a card-carrying Al-Anon member. So I can't really push somebody too hard, right? So, I mean, you can't, right, A, B, and C. Can't make anybody get this, right? And it's alcoholism, right? No, I'm not going to do what my sponsor tells me. Well, that is alcoholism in spades, right, first of all. But also, I was intrigued by this because I've just had never had the experience. So what I had her do is she had a sister that she would not forgive. She saw all this stuff, but she said, no, she was willing to write the letter, but then I wanted her to be in touch with the sister and have a conversation. She wouldn't do it. So I said, write it down and put it in your God box. And she put it in her God box, right? And then we finished the steps, and then she ended up getting to that amends later. She got to it later, right? Because, you know, God could and would if he were sought. So she let God, you know, we let God together. We said, well, I'm powerless, you're powerless, right? I don't have a whole lot of experience with this, right? And I hope I don't have this kind of experience again, right? Because the reality is, again, I've felt the sway of the elephant shoulders. I've just had too much benefit with a sponsor telling me to do something and doing it and seeing how wonderful this is and how great this works out. But she doesn't know that, right? She doesn't know that. I knew that. So she didn't want to. So that was a good exercise for me. My Al-Anon sponsor was like, yes, right? You're getting it, right? Just surrender, right? Because you forget. Sometimes in AA, it's like, you know, show up and do the deal. You know, it's like, well, they're not like that in Al-Anon. They're like, I don't know. It's your process, right? That's why you have so many. No, Al-Anon's unique. That's why you have so many people in Al-Anon. So many people in Al-Anon don't work the steps. Al-Anon, more than any other 12-step program that I've been in, you have a lot of people in the rooms who don't work the steps. It's interesting, right? And, you know, the reality is if you go to Al-Anon, you're going to feel better. But if you want to, you know, you want to work the steps, you're going to get better. But, and I want, you know, I want the whole plate of food, right? So I want it all. So I'm going to do the deal. But a lot of people in Al-Anon don't. But again, none of it's my business. But it was good for me to see that with my sponsee. And so we put it in her God box and that worked well for her. However, the cool thing about this sponsee, she went on the four step. Because one of the things, an interesting thing that doesn't get addressed in the resentment, in the four step, in the big book, right, is it doesn't talk about, we had the whole thing about who do I resent and what is the cause. But a very important part that doesn't get acknowledged here, there's two other parts that I have people do. It's not in the big book, but I have people do it. And I don't even know if my spot, I'm imagining somebody gave this to me or else, you know, God planted it in me, but it probably came from a sponsor. But not only who do I resent, who might resent me? So we do a whole other template. Who might resent me and what is the cause? And am I affected in all these ways? Right? By who might resent me? So for instance, right? And then, so that's one thing. And then the other thing, stealing. That also does not necessarily get addressed by who do I resent or who might resent me. Now, it might show up with who resents me, but I actually will always say that to a sponsee before we, you know, are moving on, as I say, oh, let's not forget this. Did you do any stealing? Because stealing was a big part of my story, right? So, and it's really important to get that written down. So I'd said this to this woman, let's just call her Jane. And I said to Jane, did you do any stealing? And she said, well, there is one thing that I did. She said, I've gone to a lot of doctor's appointments. She had a son who was special needs, raising him. He was an adult son in the home. And she'd been, you know, had him in her home for 40 years. And she goes to a lot of doctor appointments for him and for her son. And she said, I have been stealing magazines from doctor's offices for years. And I said, okay, all right. I said, well, write it down. So we write it down. So then we get to the 8-step amends. And I said, so what is the amount? You know, you said you've stolen magazines. What would you say is the amount, the dollar amount you would give on these magazines that you've stolen over the years? And she pondered it for a moment. Again, she was an engineer, brilliant woman, and she thought about it. She said, well, I guess if I thought about it, I would estimate it was probably around $5,000. And I said, really? $5,000? I said, wow, that's a lot of magazines. And just reminding you, Jane, kind of how this rolls, right, is, and it was what my sponsor told me, right, is if I've stolen whatever amount I've stolen, I got to pay that back. You know, living amends are nonsense, right? My sponsor, first sponsor said to me, I'm going on the assumption you want to make living amends. That's why you're here. Living amends means I've changed my life. But if you've stolen from somebody, it's not enough to say I've changed my life. You pay them back and then you keep that life change going, right? That is part of what will solidify that life change, that it's not just talking heads, right? She said, so great. I'm glad you want to make a life change. How much did you steal? How much did you shoplift, right? I had those conversations with the sponsor. So I said, Jane, just reminding you, right, because just kind of how I roll and how I was sponsored and, you know, how this goes is For instance, if somebody stole $5,000 worth of magazines, they'd have to pay $5,000 back. So I said, I think we should maybe rethink this. I think you're kind of overestimating. Is it a possibility that maybe the figure was something closer to, I don't know, maybe $500, right? And she said, no, I would say it's actually probably $5,000. And I said, Jane, honey, if you stole $5,000 worth of magazines, in terms of your sponsorship relationship with me, you would have to pay $5,000 back. Are you sure? Because that sounds like an awfully high figure. I was giving her every opportunity, right, to bump that number down, even if it was $5,000, right? And she said, no, I think it's $5,000. I said, well, we gotta do this. We're on the eighth and ninth step. I gave her direction. You know, you got to start paying this back. Come up with a plan. She called me the next morning for our daily call, and she said, I contacted HR at my work, and they're going to take $100 out of my check every week for the next 50 weeks. So in a year's time, she was going to have this $5,000 paid, and she was sending it to a charity. Like, and that woman is probably never going to have to eat ever again. And she's the one who wouldn't call her sister. Right? So, like, I mean, it's so great. It's like, you know, like we all have those blank spots, right? Don't we? You know, we all do. And for many of us, the money would be at least $5,000 worth of magazines. I don't know. I can't believe it. That's just an incredible story. But at any rate, so that was the answer on that one, right? Is we put it in a God box. And you just love it. I mean, you just love that's what's so great about all of us, right? These wonderful colors and the perfection that we are, the, you know, perfect in our imperfection, you know, that kind of a thing. Let's open it up for questions. Yep. And I'll get you and then you right behind there next.
I have a resentment that I'm so attached to, I insist I'll never give it up.
Sure. Well, call me and we can chat about it. After, and we'll see what your sponsor has said. So yeah, I'm going to give you my phone number. I've handed out my card and I'll give out all the cards that I've got, but here's my phone number. Write it down and, you know, we can be outreach buddies. My sponsor makes me make, live outreach calls, 3 live outreach calls or 6 message calls or any combination thereof on a daily basis. So call me for outreach. Make sure you leave your phone number. My sponsor always says leave it twice. So I would invite you to leave it twice. But my phone number is 310-413-1745, 310-413-1745. I love outreach calls. Take my email because I'm going to turn you on to something. I don't want to talk about it within the constraints of Overeaters Anonymous. It's a 12-step thing, but it's something different. But contact me via email if you want something interesting. My email address is sjenka. You know, I said that to somebody one time. I said, you know, my email address, sjenka. She said, oh, S as in Susan? And I said, well, I guess. Or Sheila, but sure. S as in Susan. Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. Right? S-J-E, my last name, Jenka. J-E-N-C-A. S-J-E-N-C-A at UCLA.edu. And send me an email, and there's something cool I can, you know, turn you on to. So there's, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff out there in terms of meetings and telephone. It's telephone meeting and different things and stuff like that. So, yep, cool. Yep. Oh, yes, thank you. Good remembering. Thank you. Oh, hi, baby.
One comment about if this person does it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And they
get a resentment list for them. And, you know,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah, no, I know. And
I would think that that's a toxic.
I hear you. No, I hear you. Absolutely. Absolutely. No. I mean, and I've had different people give me opinions and stuff and things about father-in-law and different things like that. And absolutely. And kiddo, what I always do is I say, look, we're in this together. Let's hold hands and try and figure this out together. You know, I would lean into the community, right? Get to, you know, share it on in meetings and say, you know what, you know, because we don't do crosstalk in meetings, but just say, you know, I got this issue going on with this, you know, gremlin in my life who kind of keeps doing the same thing over and over again. I've been through the 4-step process and just want to hear if anybody's had any experience with somebody doing hurtful behavior over and over. How have you handled it? Talk about it on outreach calls, right? I mean, these are the kind of things. So I just tell them, lean into the community. Find it, right? Pray about it. Meditate. You know, make sure you're meditating. If you are not meditating on a regular basis, you have not gotten what you came here for. You haven't. So, you know, I make sure, bless you. Yeah, I make sure all my sponsees are, you know, I start them meditating right from the beginning, 5 minutes a day minimum, right? Like, let's go access something greater than you. So, you know, we find the solutions. You know, you don't find it all the time. And I don't, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with somebody showing up doing something hurtful over and over. I never had a husband who beat me. I never had, you know, I've had sponsees who've had those experiences, right? But I just, that's just not anything that's, you know, come up from my experience. But yeah, no, I don't have people apologizing to husbands who are beating you and then, you know, stay in the marriage. You know, I just said, you know, I don't know what you should do. That's what my Al-Anon sponsor taught me to say. I just know it wouldn't work for me to be in a marriage where somebody's beating me. That wouldn't work for me. I'd be in jail because I'd buy a gun and blow his head off, right? It wouldn't work for me. So my alcoholism serves me in that regard. Yes. Well, this is the big book. This is not my style. It's the big book style.
The way you've done it, big book. What I'm not getting is why keep the, you know, you're trying to limit the story. You know, even if, you know, there was a statement made about journaling and you said, that's keeping you in the story. Why, I'm trying to figure out, reconcile that conflict.
Well, what, read the book. And what the book says is that It's cause, we're trying to get down to causes and conditions. That's the paragraph before it launches into this. It says, we're trying to get down into causes and conditions. I'm not trying to be a flag bearer, right? I'm not trying to win. I don't want to win. I don't want to be the right one. There's part of me that does. I want to be the right one in this thing with my father-in-law. But what do I win if I win? Right? I'm right and the dying 89-year-old man is wrong? Wow. What, you know? Almost as good as Powerball. Like, what? What do I get? What do I get by being right in that? Now, I got to tell you, I can stand here and have that conversation, and I can tell you, I don't ever want to go in that man's house again. And like somebody pointed out to me from Al-Anon, she said, you're not making a moral judgment. You're just following direction. And the last direction you had from him was, get out of my house. So, you know, I don't really want to get on the phone. And I'm imagining at some point he's going to miss our conversations. Because he used to have, you know, he would be on the phone with me. He was on the phone with me for an hour a week, you know, 6 weeks ago. And if my husband talks to him for 5 minutes, that's a long conversation. Right? But I got too close. He's a narcissist. My heart's open. I'm vulnerable. We had a couple of loving moments that day. And like my therapist said, she said, you scared the hell out of him. He had to get you out of there. He was going to find some reason to get you out of there. Right? Because if I made dinner, I probably wasn't going to make the right thing. Or I burned it. Or it wasn't done. Or one of the, you know, whatever. So if this isn't going to engender compassion and all it's going to be is about being a size whatever, it's not that interesting. That's not my problem. My heart hurts because I want to shut you out because I'm afraid, you know? And I just don't want to be afraid anymore, you know? Yeah.
How you would forgive yourself.
Yeah, that was good. You talked about that. Yeah, that is the biggest one. And those are the things that I've really struggled with. The last time I did a big book inventory was about a year ago. And I have created pages. And I have like 15 or 30, 20 lines on a page, and I print them duplex, so it's like 40 lines, and I filled out like three of those pages, so I had like 120 resentments toward myself about various things, stuff I hadn't, and I had a sponsor who had me detail, you know, all the stuff I haven't, you know, been willing to forgive myself for. And I, you know, just read it to her. And I mean, even I got bored, you know, by the time I was done with it. It's just been a real process. And tell me your first name. Yeah, Chuck. Chuck, it's really important for me to see. So let's say. So one of the things is I resent myself for letting my grades fail in high school. I was an all-A student in junior high, you know, had really high academic aspirations and just got sidetracked in high school, and my grades plummeted. So I resent myself the cause my grades plummeted in high school, which affected my destiny. I mean, it affects where you can go to college and affects a lot of things, right? So does that affect my self-esteem? Yep. Money? Yep. Ambitions? Uh-huh. Relationships? Yep. Sexually? Probably. Security? Mm-hmm. Pride? For sure. and it's really important for me to get here then, Chuck, and see, is it selfish for me to not forgive myself for not having done what I feel like I should have done? It is. It's actually selfish for me to hold myself accountable. In the same way, if Ellie had done something, right, for me to say, you know what, Ellie, you should have done this in high school. That would be selfish for me to assert that she should have done something. Here's what I know. Here's like my little bit of freedom. And I tell myself this when I'm having a hard time doing a number on myself about something. I did the best I could do. That's all I know. That's all I know. You know, I'm a musician and I didn't practice when I was a kid. And so now, you know, you're practicing it, you know, as an adult and you think, oh man, I lost 30 years. Christ, right? I can do a number on myself about anything like that. And that is selfish. And how it shows up for me, because if I'm pining about the fact that I'm not a premier pianist / guitarist because I lost 30 years, I'm not going to be available for you or you or you or her or you or him, right? Because I'm going to be so bummed out, right? That's selfish, right? Is it dishonest? Could I have done anything different? I couldn't. I'd been molested 6-7 years before. I'd gone through puberty. I've now just put on 30-40 pounds. I'm too fat to be a cheerleader. All of a sudden, my whole destiny changed. So I'm not the cheerleader girl anymore. Now I'm the fat girl on the tennis team, right? Playing doubles, less, you know, court space to run around, right? That works for me as an overweight girl, right? There was violence in my home. There was raging. My mother was, you know, she would get mad and throw things, break things. I consider it a miracle that I'm not in a room rocking with my thumb in my mouth. And the idea that I even made it through is a revelation, right? So it would be dishonest for me to not forgive myself for not having done better in high school. Right? Yeah. And then is it fear-based? Is it fearful? Well, sure, I feel afraid. I feel like I should have been more. Bigger, stronger, faster, smarter, prettier, quieter, younger. Right? Whatever. You know? That's just the nonsense. Which all, again, circles back to the selfishness. It's all just me thinking about me and what a problem I am. You know, there was something that I found kind of cool about coming up with 120 things that I didn't forgive about myself, and there was something that was really boring about it. You know, like, oh my God, really? Get over yourself. You know, and maybe, just maybe, I did the best I could do. That's a foreign concept. I mean, I didn't learn that in my home. Yep.
Do you have any upcoming retreats
or
state?
No, but, you know, let's be in touch and be outreach. And there's all kinds of great stuff. I can turn you on to some wicked, wonderful people and cool stuff. And we got a whole bunch of cool stuff. And there is some stuff. But talk to me on the break. It's not that interesting. What's that?
San Diego.
I couldn't. I had to. I helped them find someone else. I couldn't do that. We'll talk on the break. Yep.
I think that we think of suicide as being an expression of a person who's like the most depressed, but it's really a very selfish act.
It is, but I don't subscribe to that. You know, one of my best friends up in Canada is it is the largest clearinghouse for suicide in the world, and I had a cousin who committed suicide. Suicide's all about pain. Suicide is what happens when somebody runs out of tools for coping with the pain. That's what suicide is. So, I don't subscribe to that idea. Sure. No, of course it does. I know it hurt me to lose my cousin. But, again, it just reminds me. You know, there was a great, I'll just close and I'll tell you this. And then we'll pray and be done. There was a great article in the New Yorker, and they were talking about this is great. This is actually a great thing for us to end on. They were talking about the Golden Gate Bridge when there was a big decision about whether or not they were going to put safety rails, which they have gone now ahead and done. But they were debating about whether or not they were going to put rails on the Golden Gate Bridge, because the Golden Gate Bridge, before they put these rails on, no bridge in the world has more people jumping off and committing suicide than the Golden Gate Bridge, right? So they were trying to figure out whether or not they should put up security railings to prevent this, right? Because this is not, you know, something you want to put on your city promotional material, right? We've got the bridge, right? More people kill themselves here than, you know, that's not what you want. So this article was looking at that debate, and a cop told a story that there are cops who their job was to be on that bridge every day, week after week, looking for people who were jumpers, right? And this cop is talking about how you could always kind of see when somebody was going to probably jump, right? They kind of are walking back and forth, and they're, you know, kind of pacing, and then they'll slowly turn around, and they're, you know, he just said you start figuring out who these people are, and, you know, who's going to do it. And he was watching this guy, right? And, you know, you got to keep a certain distance, and it's that whole game about how close can you get, and can you grab them before they jump, and, you know, once they start, you know, go toward the thing, then you got to quickly, I mean, it is really a process. And he finally saw, and this guy got his leg over, and, you know, he couldn't get to him before the guy jumped. And he jumped and died. There has been one person who actually went off that bridge and lived, and now does, you know, he does motivational speeches and stuff. It was unbelievable. Lots of broken bones and stuff, and it's the only one. He's the only one they've known about. But anyway, so this guy got off, went over and died. And so, you know, they fish him out, and, you know, you get the identification and stuff, and they ended up, you know, go to this guy's house. And this guy lived a mile and a half from the Golden Gate Bridge. And he had written a note. He had written a note and left it on his desk. And he said, "I'm walking to the Golden Gate Bridge. If one person smiles at me on the way, I'm not going to kill myself." And this cop said he just lost it in this guy's house when he read that note, you know, because he was there, because the guy had done it. And it just reminds me how important it is that I do this work, because for me, and I am only speaking for me, anytime I'm not forgiving someone here, this is going on. This is definitely going on, because I got a lot of stuff I want to be forgiven for. And fear is the deal. But this is definitely going on. And if it's all about me, because I don't play a better guitar, I should have gone to a private school instead of being the statey that I am, right? Or I should have studied this, or I should be fluent in Spanish, or whatever, right? I'm not available for you, and I never know who needs my smile. You know what I mean? Just never know. So I, as much as possible, try to really be available for you, because you need me. And my God, I need you. So I'm very, very grateful, and I'm so glad that you came. And it is so important what we do here. And it does not matter what you weigh or what you eat. Just get free. And if you want to eat something different, or if you are not comfortable at your weight, we can help you with that. But do not lose sight of the fact what you weigh has nothing to do with your profound, profound value. I love you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. I love you. I love OA. Thank you to all of us. Yay.